Good day, everyone, and welcome to the 360 Finance First Quarter 2020 Earnings Conference Call. Please also note today's event is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference call over to Ms. Mandy Zhong, IR Director. Please go ahead, Mandy.
Thank you, operator. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our first quarter 2020 earnings conference call. Our results were issued earlier today and can be found on our IR website. Joining me today on the call are Mr. Wu Haisheng, our CEO and Director, Mr. Alex Wu, our CFO and Director, and Mr. Zheng Yan, our Vice President. Before we begin our prepared remarks, I would like to remind you of the company's safe harbor statement in connection with today's earnings call. Except for any historical information, the material discussed on this conference call may contain forward-looking statements. These statements are based on our current plans, estimates, and projections, and therefore, you should not place undue reliance on them. Forward-looking statements involve inherent risks and uncertainties. We caution that a number of important factors could cause actual results to differ materially from those contained in any forward-looking statement. For more information about potential risks and uncertainties, please refer to the company's filing with the SEC in its registration statement. In addition, this call will also include a discussion of certain non-GAAP financial measures. Please refer to our earnings release, which contains a reconciliation of the non-GAAP measures to the most directly comparable GAAP measures. Finally, please note that unless otherwise stated, all figures mentioned during this conference call are in RMB. I will now turn the call over to our CEO and the Director, Mr. Wu Haisheng.
好，谢谢 Mandy。今天我用中文说，所以 Mandy 我替我翻译。感谢各位参加今天我们的季度业绩发布会。2020年的第一个季度是一个不平凡的季度。整个金融科技行业经历了一次由疫情引起的非常严峻的考验。360金融始终坚持合规稳健的经营原则，凭借我们优质的客群和审慎的内部管理，我们成功地通过了这次的压力测试。不仅如此，我们的各项工作都取得了非常优异的成绩。我们 Q1 的单季放款量达到518亿，同比增长25.6%，贷款余额由上个季度的722亿增长到731亿。财务方面，我们2020年 Q1 总收入达到31.8亿人民币。如果不考虑新的会计准则的影响，本季度 non-GAAP net income 达到7.6亿人民币，是我们上市以来表现非常突出的一个季度。
Well, I will translate for our CEO. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining our earnings call today. The first quarter of 2020 was a highly unusual one, during which the entire fintech industry went through a COVID-19-induced extreme stress test. While maintaining a compliant and cautious operation strategy, we successfully passed the test with flying colors, attributing to our high-quality borrower base and the prudent internal management. Furthermore, we attained remarkable progress in every aspect of our business operation, despite the challenging market conditions. Loan origination volume reached RMB 51.8 billion during the quarter, a 25.6% year-over-year increase. Outstanding loan balance increased to RMB 73.1 billion from RMB 72.2 billion in the fourth quarter of 2019. In terms of our financial performance, total revenue reached RMB 3.18 billion for the first quarter. If we exclude the impact of new accounting standards, non-GAAP net income reached RMB 764 million for the first quarter, one of the most exceptional results we have accomplished since our IPO.
即使是面对疫情的影响，公司的各项指标都有一个实质性的提升。下面允许我把我们这几个工作跟大家做一个更新。
Despite the impact from the pandemic, every front of our operations improved essentially. Next, let me give you an update on the key progress since our last call.
风控方面，尽管面对疫情的冲击，我们的风控模型运转仍然是非常有效而且稳定。我们的资产质量迅速恢复，入萃率及回收率均已在持续改善中。我们最新的 Day One Delinquency 已经下降至 6.6%， M1 的回收率也上升至 85.8% 以上。 M3 加的 Delinquency 指标，它是有一定的这个时间的滞后性，这个季度的 2.17% 的水平比疫情前有所上升，但是仍然表现非常优异。我们在不良拨备方面，在本季度仍然保持四倍的拨备覆盖率，也正是基于公司对自己业务和技术能力的充分的自信，我们在疫情前后都坚持做到了最充分和透明的披露。
In terms of risk management, well, as our risk models face some pressure from the impact of the pandemic, they remained effective and stable. This bolstered the quick recovery of our underlying asset quality and improving momentum of the D1 delinquency rate and collection rate. Up to present, our D1 delinquency rate has fallen to 6.6%, while M1 collection rate has increased to above 85.8%. Our M3 delinquency rate, which is a lagging indicator, went up to 2.17% compared to pre-pandemic level. Nevertheless, this is a remarkable result amid the challenging environment. We continued to ensure a provisional coverage of 4 times during the quarter. Thanks to our strong operational and technical capabilities, we managed to provide a full and transparent industry-leading information disclosure throughout the pre-pandemic and the pandemic period.
关于 Capital Light, 由于这个模式不承担信用风险，截至本季度末，这部分业务为公司累计释放了约7.8亿的自由现金。按照余额口径计算，分润模式占比由上个季度的19.5%增加到本季度的21.2%。我们会继续坚持 Capital Light 模式的长期正确性，同时也会根据市场情况调整其增长节奏，保证公司和股东利益的最大化。
In terms of Capital Light model, under our platform service business, for which we take no principal risk, by the end of the first quarter, platform service business helped free up accumulated RMB 780 million in operational cash flow. Outstanding loan balance under the Capital Light model accounted for 21.2% of total loan book, up from 19.5% in the fourth quarter of 2019. Going forward, our long-term growth strategy will focus on expanding our Capital Light model while cautiously pacing the growth to ensure it aligns well with market dynamics and maximize shareholders' value.
疫情期间我们更加关注经营效率，所以关于经营效率的分享这个是这样子的。公司在一季度因为市场的变化，我们主动的收缩了新客的获取数量，市场营销费用继续下降，我们单位授信用户成本由上个季度的228元降低到本季度的159元。考虑到我们风控政策的收紧，贴合率降低，所以同口径下我们的获客成本其实更低。同时我们对获客进行持续的精细化运营，拓宽了渠道，提高用户质量。我们接入了类似哈罗单车、小米、 爱奇艺等很多优质的场景性质的渠道。由于我们的用户体验足够好，我们有希望越来越多的场景方选择跟我们合作。在老用户方面，我们之前开发的一款类似虚拟信用卡的产品，在一季度取得了非常好的成绩，大大提高了用户粘性。这个产品30天的复购率在80%左右，平均每个月交易10次一个用户。我们还对老用户提供了一个信用修复和提升的产品，叫幸好有你，受到了非常多用户的欢迎，目前已经有150万的用户在使用了。我们还做了一款产品叫智信引擎，用来做睡眠用户的激活，也取得了非常好的效果。总之，我们今年还会通过各种创新来提升我们全流程的效率和用户粘性。另外，就是从年初至今，我们已经发行了3期的 ABS， 最近一期的优先 A 级资金成本已经降低到4.2%。公司来自自担风险业务的综合资金成本从去年的8%下降到本季度的7.7%。
Well, in terms of operational efficiency, we proactively scaled back borrower acquisition activities and continued to cut down sales and marketing expense during the quarter in response to market change. As a result, acquisition cost for each new borrower with approved credit line fell to RMB 159 from RMB 228 in the fourth quarter of 2019. This drop-down in customer acquisition costs was attributable to that we brought down approval rate under a more prudent risk management strategy. Also, we carried on diversified strategy in customer acquisition activities in an effort to expand more channels and obtain users with better credit profiles. We have established a cooperation with various high-quality channel partners with consumption scenarios such as Hello Bike, Xiaomi, and iQIYI. Since we provided more superior user experience, we expect more and more channel partners would welcome our partnership. In terms of existing customer management, a virtual credit card product called V-Pocket, in Chinese, Wei Ling Hua, which we developed in the past, increasingly contributed to our user stickiness in the first quarter. To elaborate, repeated purchase rate within 30 days reached 80%, indicating a monthly transaction number of 10 times on average. Additionally, we offered a credit limit upgrade product called 幸好有你 in Chinese, which proved to be quite popular, and it has accumulated 1.5 million users already. Moreover, we launched a product called Intelligence Credit Engine, 智信 in Chinese, aiming to activate borrowers who haven't conducted their first credit drawdown on our app. This product proved to be quite effective as well. In summary, we intend to explore different initiatives to enhance operational efficiency in every element of our business and boost user stickiness further. In addition, we have successfully issued 3 ABS this year so far. The cost of the most recent one reached a coupon rate as low as 4.2% for the senior A tranche, contributing to a further decrease in overall funding cost for our credit-driven service to only 7.7% from 8% in the fourth quarter of 2019.
在合规方面，作为头部的金融科技平台，我们始终坚守高标准合规原则。我们已经向中国互联网金融协会申请并通过了移动金融客户端应用软件备案，与 BAT、京东、陆金所等一起成为除金融机构和支付机构以外仅有的几家备案企业之一。另外，360借条 App 已获得国家计算机病毒应急处理中心评测3级证书，此证书为最高等级， 其中隐私政策和信息安全皆互评三级。
In terms of compliance, as a leading fintech platform in China, we have always adhered to the highest standard in compliance. Together with BAT, JD, Lufax, and other platforms, we were among the first batch of companies to receive approval to file our mobile finance APP with the National Internet Finance Association of China. Among those on the list of approved mobile app, we were one of the few platforms that is neither a financial institution nor a payment company. Moreover, our 360 Jietiao app has received a level 3 testing certificate from China's National Computer Virus Emergency Response Center, the highest level issued by the institution. In particular, our app received a level 3 rating for both privacy policy and data security.
此外，值得一提的是，2020年5月9号，中国银保监会首次公开发布了商业银行互联网贷款管理办法征求意见稿，删去了简单粗暴的，一刀切性的指标，如异地放款比例、联合贷出资比例等等，针对消费贷和经营贷的不同特点，进一步细化各自在额度、期限方面的具体监管要求等。我们认为这将成为中国互联网贷款的基本法，该办法在保持金融强监管的同时，更进一步确认了互联网助贷平台在整个业务流程中的合法地位，极大消除了监管政策的不确定性，这对互联网贷款行业和助贷模式都将是一个里程碑式的事件，释放有序支持的监管态度，利好整个行业，特别是头部企业，与我们的预期基本吻合。
In addition, what's also worth mentioning is that China Banking and Insurance Regulatory Commission, in short, CBIRC, for the first time issued a consultative draft on the guideline of commercial banks' online lending business for public comments on May 9, 2020. The draft abandoned some one-size-fits-all threshold in previous versions, such as regional banks' geography constraints and funding constraints on joint lending. Instead, it differentiates consumer finance loan from business loan and sets separate regulatory requirements in terms of credit cap and tenor based on characteristics of respective loan products. We believe this will ultimately become the basic law for online lending business in China.While maintaining a strict regulatory tone, this draft further legitimizes online lending platforms in terms of business operations and substantially reduces regulatory overhead. This marks a significant milestone for China's online lending industry and the loan facilitation business. Also, it manifests that regulatory measures and support might roll out in a sequential manner.We view this regulation as beneficial to the industry, particularly leading players, as this promotes a more healthy business development environment. The regulatory development is in line with our anticipation.
最后，我们始终认为，强监管和宏观经济的压力会进一步的凸显有巨头背景行业龙头企业的优势。而中小平台将陆续退出市场，这一马太效应在一季度进一步得到了实践的证明，消费金融行业的需求仍将保持继续增长，我们相信360金融在未来能够获得更大的市场份额和更好的发展前景，我们再次确认2000亿至2200亿的全年放款量的业绩指引，短期而言，鉴于国内外的疫情现状，从目前的恢复情况看来，公司二季度的资产质量已经进入持续稳定向好的阶段。我们谨慎乐观地进行业务规划，适度增加扩客规模和交易额，推动公司资产的质和量的同步提升。公司有信心在二季度取得更加优异的业绩，回馈我们的投资者。
We always believe that the strict regulatory requirements and the economy downturn pressure would benefit top players backed by industry giants, while gradually weeding out small and middle platforms that are too weak to compete. This trend, known as massive effect, has so far been proven in the first quarter. As booming demand within the consumer finance market continues, we will be well positioned to capitalize on the growing opportunities and will harvest more market share with a promising outlook. Hence, we would like to reiterate our full-year guidance of loan origination volume, which is RMB 200 to 220 billion. In the short term, taking into consideration of the gradually recovering market and the pandemic both in China and globally, our asset quality has always and already entered into a steadily improving momentum as indicated by recent recovering operation data. We will plan and carry out our business operation with cautious optimism for the rest of the year, aiming to vigilantly grow loan origination volume and the number of borrowers. This will further boost up both quantity and the quality of our loan portfolios. We remain in confidence to deliver more outstanding results to our shareholders in the coming quarters.
下面由我们的 CFO 吴江来跟大家做更多分享。
Well, I will hand over to CFO to CFO remarks.
Okay, thank you, Haisheng, and thank you, Mandy. Good evening, everyone. Haisheng just shared with you a lot of exciting news about our first quarter and the coming quarters going forward. My part will be a little bit more boring talking about the new accounting standards, so please bear with me. So we see a quite unusual quarter compared with the previous ones, not only because of the outbreak of COVID-19, but also the complicated situation by the new accounting standards. So let me start off by explaining the difference between the new accounting standards we adopted starting this quarter and the new ones, and the migration between these two. Hopefully we will give you a clear guidance after these remarks on how to read our statements. As a U.S.-listed company, we are required to adopt the new accounting standard ASC 326, Financial Instruments-Credit Losses, from this year. In consequence, our results this quarter are not directly comparable with previous quarters on a like-for-like basis. In consideration of helping all stakeholders better understand the impact of the new accounting standards, as well as provide a more accurate reflection of our business and financial performance, I would like to spend some time working you through how the new accounting standards have impacted our financial statements. As we provide guarantee services for credit-driven service business, at the inception of each loan, we estimate expected guarantee revenue and record a contingent guarantee liabilities with provision for the potential credit losses. Under the old accounting standards, provision for the above-mentioned guarantee liabilities and the guarantee revenue are net off directly on the very first day of loan inception. However, under the new accounting standards, guarantee revenue is required to be recognized at an amortized schedule through the long low life cycle, whereas provision for this contingent guarantee liabilities remain to be recorded as a whole at day one. Two key points to emphasize here. First, the amortized recognition of guarantee revenue is not related to the actual credit loss of the loan. To put it in a planned way, even if the loan eventually becomes defaulted, guarantee revenue will still be recognized by each installment as originally scheduled. The credit losses are accounted for by adjusting provisions and guarantee liabilities. Second, from the perspective of asset quality, the old and the new accounting standards make no difference. The only change lies in the accounting treatment on paper and the timeline of recognition. As a result, for each quarter going forward, there will be two additional items on our income statement. One is provision for contingent liabilities under the expense line, which accounts for the estimated credit loss associated with the contingent guarantee liabilities driven by the new loan originated during the specific quarter. And the other one is the revenue from releasing of guarantee liabilities. Under the revenue line, for guarantee revenue released at amortized schedule driven by the historical loan assets. During the first quarter of this year, provision for contingent liabilities were 1.7 billion, while revenue from releasing of guarantee liability was 1 billion RMB. Furthermore, the new accounting standards require a one-time adjustment of expected credit loss related to existing loan portfolios, which is reflected in the open balance of the return earnings at the beginning of 2020. This translated into a 1.4 billion reduction in our return earnings. I would like to draw your attention here that the decrease of the return only mainly results from the recognition of contingent guarantee liabilities and stand-ready guarantee liabilities at the inception of the guarantees in accordance with the new standards. The stand-ready guarantee liabilities, which is the asset item, will be recognized, or say, released as a guarantee revenue on an amortized basis over the lifetime of the loan. This has no impact whatsoever on net income, business operations, and asset quality when the guarantee service expires. Hopefully, that provides more conceptual clarity on the impact of new accounting standards. Now, let's take a look at the numbers changes on our financial statements due to this new accounting standards. First, as you can see on our P&L, there is a revenue line under credit-driven service segment titled Revenue from Releasing of Guarantee Liabilities, which represents the above-mentioned guarantee revenue recognized for historical loan portfolios at amortized schedule. This line amounts 1 billion under the new standards and 170 million under the old standards. Second, there is an expense line titled Provision for Contingent Liabilities, which stands for provisions set aside for the estimated credit loss associated with the contingent guarantee liabilities driven by the new loan originated in the first quarter, which is 1.4 billion. The remainder is the additional provision of 280 million, which accounted for the additional provision to cope with the deterioration of asset quality of the historical loan portfolios due to COVID-19. Thirdly, on balance sheet, for the subline titled Return Earning in Shareholder Equity section, the balance of accumulated return earnings decreased by approximately 1.25 billion compared with year-end 2019. The decrease represented an aggregate amount of 1.4 billion reduction to the opening balance of return earnings, which accounted for one-time provision for existing loan book required by the new accounting standards, and a RMB 183 million increase in to return earnings attributed to net income attributable to ordinary shareholders in the first quarter. Well, hopefully you are not lost in my boring explanation on the accounting standards. Just in case that you are already lost, we have prepared a few slides which will be available on our IR website in the coming few days to illustrate the migration from the old accounting standards to the new one. So, which is essentially what I mentioned just now. Okay, with the clarification on the new accounting standards, I'd like to now go over a like-for-like basis analysis on financial performance under the old accounting standards in an effort to help stakeholders better understand our business operation in the first quarter. Firstly, as Haisheng just mentioned, that under the old accounting standards, the total net revenue was 2.3 billion, representing a 16.7% year-over-year increase and relatively flat on a quarterly basis, which was remarkable in our sense given the heat of the COVID-19 during the same period. Non-GAAP net income was 764 million RMB, representing a 48% quarter-over-quarter increase, one of the most exceptional quarters we ever had since IPO. Secondly, in face of significant macroeconomic uncertainty during the pandemic, we have undertaken decisive initiatives to cut down costs and enhance operational efficiency. For instance, customer acquisition cost for each new borrowers with approved credit line dropped down further to 159 yuan in the past quarter compared with 228 yuan in the fourth quarter of 2019. Total sales and marketing expense fell to 223 million yuan in the past quarter from 425 million in the fourth quarter in 2019. This was the third consecutive quarter on the improvement of customer acquisition efficiency and the financial discipline. And another solid cost efficient enhancement laid out our funding side. As Haisheng just mentioned, in the past quarter, we continue to develop cooperation with more institution funding partners despite the severe challenging market conditions. The number of the institution funding partners we work with increased from 81 to 84 by end of the past quarter. This further brought down the overall funding cost to 7.7%. In addition, we successfully issued three rounds of ABS in 2020 with a total size of more than 1 billion renminbi. The latest round of the issuance hit a historical low record of funding costs at 4.2% for the senior A tranche. We believe this is a strong reflection of financial institutions' faith with us. Thirdly, given the negative impact from volatile markets on asset quality, we continue to roll out prudent operational and financial initiatives to offset the impact. Our effort will primarily reflect in three dimensions. First, in terms of the leverage ratio, under the old accounting standards, it went down continually to 7.7 times from 8.1 times in the fourth quarter of 2019. This was primarily driven by the increased proportion of our capital line model, as Haisheng just mentioned. While our total outstanding loan balance continued to grow, the portion of the credit-driven service business actually decreased to 57.6 billion at the end of the first quarter from 58.1 billion as the year end of 2019. Second, in the fourth quarter of 2019, we booked additional provision of 735 million to enhance our provision coverage ratio to 4.4 times as we noticed the challenge on the asset quality due to unfavorable market condition. In the first quarter of this year, we had witnessed the deterioration of the asset quality in February, but then it slowly returning back to the normalized level. Hence, we further booked provision of 280 million to maintain a 4 times provision coverage ratio. Third, our cash result hit a historical record of $6.8 billion. Excluding cash deposit required in operations, registered capital for various business license and operational working capital, our free cash flow recorded at the highest level of $1.6 billion in the first quarter. This was largely benefit from our diligent efforts on cost control and operational efficiency, such as reducing the turnover days of accounts receivables and reasonably increased the turnover days of payables to our business partners during the COVID-19 situation. All these efforts have not only equipped us with the flexibility to navigate the pandemic storm, but also position us to capture the historic and the enormous growth opportunities when we exit this crisis. Finally, let me give you some color about our outlook for the second quarter and full years from a financial perspective. First, our business during the second quarter has improved remarkably on a sequential basis and should be reflected in our financial performance in the coming quarter. We expect a decent growth in terms of both top line and bottom line on our P&L in the second quarter. Based on our current assessment, we do not expect to incur any further additional provisions for credit losses triggered by the deterioration of asset quality in the near future. With guaranteed revenue from historical loan book being recognized over time, we expect shareholders' equity to gradually return to a healthier level. Second, we are still evaluating market conditions to decide whether we will resume a scalable expansion of business. However, we should remain vigilant on the potential second round of negative impact due to the global pandemic development. Hence, we would like to maintain our full year 2020 guidance. No change. That concluded my remarks. Thank you, everyone. Now we are open for questions.
Thank you. We now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for today's speaker, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter the queue. After you're announced, please ask a question. If you find your question has been answered before it is your turn to speak, please press 02 to cancel the question. Presently, we'll have a short reminder to the analysts ready within the queue. For many who can converse in Chinese language, please kindly ask questions again in Chinese language after your questions in English language. Thank you. Our first question is from John Tai at Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you management for taking my questions and congratulations on the results. So I have a few, I'll probably ask them one by one. So first is on the accounting adjustment. So I noticed that the release mentioned there is around 840 million revenue resulted from this accounting change, and then there's 1.4 billion cost. So simply put, the difference is the accounting adjustment, and I think it's roughly 580 million. So and when I add this number to our profit, it seems to be in line with the 764 million non-GAAP net profit under the old standard. So so the first question is really just whether this understanding is correct.
John, yes, you are correct.
Okay, so follow up on that is on the $1.4 billion incremental cost. So if I look at this number in the context of the guarantee of balance sheet origination, I guess that's what the CECL impact would have. So if I divided this by the origination of balance sheet guarantee loan, the number is 4.5%. So does that reflect our lifetime loss estimate for the first quarter originated loan? And it seems a little bit high given our day one delinquency is roughly 6 to 7%. So just want to confirm this.
First of all, I need to take a look at your calculation formula, but the number is quite close compared with our calculation. And just a small reminder, this is not a vintage, this is our provision. So it's more like a coverage, right? So probably our CRO will give you more flavors on the vintage loss numbers, but here what I can say is that this is to cover the first quarter's estimate loss throughout the lifetime, and we provide a sufficient buffer. As I just mentioned, we will maintain the 4x coverage ratio to secure this to make sure the stability of our business.
Okay, thank you. And so also related to risk, basically I think we mentioned that the provision is for loans originated in previous period is 280 million. So I guess if we exclude the accounting change, the guarantee release from the old loans without the accounting impact is also around 280 million. So basically, we don't have any incremental provision for this quarter, meaning that the release of the previous set aside guarantee is able to fully offset the incremental provision. Is that a proper understanding as well?
Well, those numbers are slightly off. So for the revenue from releasing of guaranteed liabilities under the old standards was 170 million, 170, not 280. And by the way, that was the highest level throughout since our IPO. Then for the additional provision on the guaranteed liabilities to cope with the COVID-19 was 280. That part, you are correct.
Okay, thank you. And so finally, on the M3 plus delinquency, I think this is lagged by a quarter. So the ratio is above 2% now, and I think it does not include the impact from COVID-19. So because it happens in the first quarter, so how should we expect this number to trend in second quarter? And also, does the pickup in first quarter due to the collection tightening in the fourth quarter other than the COVID-19? Thank you.
Well, do you mind to translate in Chinese so our CRO can answer a little bit?
Yes, sure. 就是想问一下这个M3加这个 delinquency， 因为它是可能lag 了一个 quarter 嘛，就是延后了一个季度，所以这个数可能还没有反应，就是说一季度这个疫情引发的这个预期情况啊，所以这个是不是更多的反应啊？四季度可能因为催收这个收紧造成的一个新发生的预期，以及这个M3加是不是以后还会持续上升啊？谢谢。
这个是这样，就是我觉得我们一般看 M3 加呢，这个数据是具有一定的滞后性的。那我们更多的就按照我们之前讲的，我们在看那个所谓的静态不良的静态不良生成率那么个指标，就是分子的话就是 咱们的不良的一个金额，分母是基本上是按两个月前的一个两个季度前的一个余额。对，那按照那个数据呢，我们确实也会有所上涨。那这个上涨呢，确实是跟这个催收当时策略是有一定的关系的。但是整体的疫情呢，其实对这个数据也会产生一些影响，它主要是影响在我们的30家的一些逾期金额的一个回收率上面。对，那这块我们看到在之前也会显著的受到一些影响。对，那之后的 Q2 季度的 M3+ 呢，理论上应该还会有一些上涨的一些压力。对，但应该不会特别的多。那现在我们其实更关注的还是说资产风险的一个先行指标了，就是我们常说的 Day One 的逾期率和 M1 的一个回收率。对，那就是正如海生前面讲的，其实这一段时间我们
Should I translate for the English or then on the call?
好的，你先翻译一下啊。
Yeah, okay. John, this is the response from our CEO's view. First of all, M3 delinquency rate is a time lagging indicator. Well, we will suggest to look at more meaningful metrics, as we stated in the presentation we put on our IR website, which is the adjusted delinquency rate, with the denominator is the loan balance as of 2 quarters ago, and the numerator is the delinquent amount. That's the first point. Second point, as for the impacting factor for this M3 delinquency rate, yes, you are correct. As this is a time lagging indicator, it will be affected by the covenant restriction which happened in the fourth quarter of 2019. But moreover, we think you should look at some leading indicator, as we disclosed. One is D1 delinquency rate, the other one is the expected M1 collection rate. So all in all, we will expect to see the M3 delinquency rate face some pressure in the coming quarter, but still, our recommendation is to focus, the leading indicator will give you a better sense of our business performance.
对，然后实际上我们现在更关注就是这个先行指标嘛。那最近一段时间呢，我们的 Day One Delinquency 已经降到去年 Q4 的平均水平以下了，且周百周看还是处于一个下降的趋势。那30天内的回收率呢，也回升到86%以上，而且最近一个月的逾期金额的我们预计它的30天的回收率是有望冲击87%以上的回收率的。对，所以总体来说，其实我们是认为资产质量是处于一个快速恢复的一个阶段。对，那关于这个 M3+ 的不良率呢，实际上我们看另外一个数，就是我们在保持了一个400%的一个拨备覆盖率。用拨备去覆盖这一块的一个不良的一个金额，对，这一块是比较足够的啊。
Well, let me transfer our CLO. Again, we'd like to stress it is a better way to understand our business by looking at the indicator, which is D1 and M1. To elaborate more, recently, our D1 delinquency has dropped down to the similar level as in that in the fourth quarter of 2019. And in addition, if we look at this data week by week, it's at a descending trend. For M1 collection rate, it has recovered to above 86% already. Recently, if we take a closer look, we believe it probably will go higher, reaching 87% in the near future. So all in all, we believe the asset quality of our business is in the steadily recovering momentum. That's the first point. The second point, to address your question about M3 delinquency rate, we will suggest you to look at our provisional coverage ratio, which we successfully maintained 4 times pre-pandemic and now.
非常感谢，就是最后可能就是再确认一下，就是我们现在的拨备已经充分反映了由于四季度催收跟疫情的这个时候的损失，就是基于我们的评估吧，so my final confirmation is about whether the current provision level has fully reflected the potential loss due to the tightening of collections in the first quarter and also the COVID-19 in the first quarter.
Yes, John, you are right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you once again. Please press 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. To cancel, please press 02. And also a gentle reminder to the analysts already within the queue. For many who can converse in Chinese language, please kindly ask your questions again in Chinese language after your questions in English language. Our next question is from Jackie Zhou at China Renaissance. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, management. Thanks for taking my questions. First question from me is on the second quarter outlook. Can you share with us about the recent loan origination volume trend? I think we guided a stable loan volume for the second quarter, but just wondering if we see some pickup signs recently. And probably more on that is on what condition we will increase our loan origination volume. Would that happen in the third quarter, given the current judgment? And the second question is on the funding. I heard that our funding costs further reduced to 7.7% in the first quarter. Try to get some color on the reasons behind this declining funding cost. Are we see more demand after the new regulations on banks on the lending business? And are we getting more funding from like national big banks? And definitely we have some impact from the low EBS issuance as well, low-cost EBS issuance as well. So that's on funding. My final question is on the new product mentioned by our CEO is called Linghua. It's basically the virtual credit card product. So, just want to get more color about the number of users and kind of the profitability of this new product. So I will translate my questions. 这个管理层好，我这边三个问题啊，一个是关于我们二季度的这个。 一些展望吧，尤其是这个放款量这边的一个情况，那是不是看到最近的这个放款量也有一些提升？那可能看得更远一点，就是三季度，我们会不会就是在什么样的情况下会增加我们这个放款量吧？那第二个问题是关于这个负债端，就是我们资金成本其实在一季度是继续下降。 到7.7，那想理解一下这个背后的原因啊，是不是也是因为在这个新的这个互联网贷款的管理办法之后，可能看到资金方更积极了，然后是不是我们有更多的资金是来自于大银行，然后这个可能 EBS 这边也会有一些贡献。那最后第三个问题就是关于我们新的这个 V0花这个虚拟信用卡的产品吧，想可能能不能再跟我们介绍一下这个具体的。 有多少用户啊？然后目前的一个盈利的情况，谢谢。
谢谢 Jackie，我来回答你的问题啊。第一个是关于那个放款量这个 outlook，二季度确实像你说的，因为国内疫情形势向好， 然后整个经济生活也逐渐恢复正常，监管也比较明朗化了，所以整体行业是相对有一个比较好的一个机会窗口。而且基于目前我们二季度已经发生了的这个数据，我们发现用户的需求和资产质量都在回升，公司的经营效率也比以前更好，所以有理由期望二季度会是一个相对较好的季度，从业务上财务上应该都是。要是看三季度的话，可能我们还会去考察几个方面，一个就是国际上疫情会不会对国内形成影响，以及国内会不会发生第二波疫情。另外就是我们看中美关系对中国的外贸型企业的影响会不会那个延伸到我们这种企业里来，目前看很小，但是我们会继续观察这些，所以等这些大的不确定性消除之后，我们会去做更加乐观的去增长，但是在这个之前我们还是会继续用一种谨慎的原则去开展工作。这是第一个问题。
Okay, let me translate for our CEO responsible your question, Jackie. First of all, if we anticipate the outlook in Q2, as the Chinese government gradually contain the pandemic domestically, and the market is recovering, we do witness the improving trend in our operating data, our asset quality, and the operation efficiency. Therefore, we believe we can expect a stronger quarter in operational and financial aspect. As your question for the Q3 outlook, well, we believe it's kind of too early to see, but we will stay in a vigilant manner to expand our business for the rest of the year, which depends on a few factors. Number one is the global pandemic situation. As you know, living in a global village, no one can stay safe if other houses catch fire. The second factor we'll look at is the tension between China and U.S., which will impact the export industries in China. Luckily, from the current data, we see the limited impact from the second reason. So, to summarize, when we can have better visibility, we will communicate to the market our business plan.
第二个关于资金成本下降的原因，多方面，比如今年宏观环境资金面本身就会宽一些，然后我们也做了很多的 ABS 的发行， ABS 的成本非常非常的低，但是我们认为更关键的在于整个市场是向头部优质资产公司去靠拢，这个是在过去的几个季度里持续发生的一种趋势。资金方已经看到一些中小平台的风险可能会比预期的高，所以而且我们的口碑持续向好，所以更多的还是因为资产在资金向优质资产去靠拢，向头部公司靠拢。
As for your question about the dropping down of the funding cost, well, of course, we see a very sufficient liquidity in China market. For example, as you can see, we successfully issued 3 ABS so far this year. However, we believe the main reason lies in that loan facilitation platform who possess a better quality asset are gaining more and more bargaining power in the cooperation with funding institutions. As you can see in this year, more and more small platforms are having trouble in their asset quality.
Okay. 第三个，关于我们新产品，比如微龄化的一些情况。这个产品我们过去研发了很长时间，它是一款支付级的产品。 它非常有利于提高用户的留存，提高用户的复购。这个产品正如我刚才说的，它30天的时间里面有80%的那个用户会留存，每个用户一个月会交易10次。目前我们有48万的这个活跃用户在使用这款产品，每天有3000万左右的放款规模，然后它的盈利性是类似于我们的主产品的，所以它是一个留存很好但是盈利性也不错的产品。
Well, as for your question about the V Pocket Chinese Wei Ling Hua, in short, the same profitability level same as our core product 360 Jietiao, and also it's an app to increase our user stickiness. To elaborate, well, it's a product we developed in the past. Essentially, it's a virtual credit payment aiming to increase the user stickiness and the retention rate. As I stated in my remarks, the 30 days repurchase rate is 80%, which means 10 times transaction in a month on average. Nowadays, it accumulated 480,000 users with average 30 million loan origination daily. Hope
Thank
that
you.
Answers your question,
you.
Jackie.
Yeah, very clear. Thank you, Mandy.
Our next question is from Daphne Poon at Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, management. Thanks for taking my question. So I have three questions. First one is that on your vintage delinquency rate, just can you update on your latest expectation for the vintage loss rate for Q1 and also for the new loans originated in the second quarter? And second is related to that is what would be your outlook for the provisions in the second quarter? I think you mentioned earlier is that you expect the earnings, both top line and bottom line, to improve meaningfully. So I think part of that is related to a lower provision. So just want to get a better sense, like should we expect both a bigger release of the guarantee liabilities in Q2, and also will the provision on your new loans come down as well in the second quarter? And then the last question is regarding your customer acquisition. So that your Q1 traffic costs, we see a meaningful decline. Just wondering what's the driver behind? Do you see more of an industry trend or more because of your efforts to improve your customer acquisition model? And do you expect that decline, like this low customer acquisition cost, to sustain or to decline further? And can you provide currently a mix of your different customer acquisition channels, especially like how big is the contribution from those new like consumption scenarios that you were talking about in your prepared remarks? 我这边简单翻译一下吧，然后就是这边有三个问题。第一个问题其实关于这个就关于这个 vintage 的预计损失率，就是有没有一个最新的一个就现在的这个预期是怎么样的？就是我记得上个季度我们说今年应该大概是2.5到3.5的这个 vintage loss， 想看一下有没有就是可能更 level 的一个 range 嘛，就包括一季度和二季度新增贷款这边的一个预计 loss rate。然后第二个问题相关的就是想问一下二季度的这个拨备这边的一个 outlook， 是不是说就是两个方面吧，就一个是不是说这个 guarantee liability 会有一个比较大的更大的一个 release， 然后在新增贷款这边的新的 provision 就是这个 credit cost 是不是说二季度应该也会下来。然后第三个问题是关于获客的，就是 看到一季度的这个获客成本确实有一个比较大的下降，想问一下背后是你们觉得更大的是一个行业的趋势，就整体的这个流量成本下来，还是说你们确实做了一些这个获客上面的一个优化去drive 的，然后未来是不是可以就是这个下行的这个趋势是否可以持续，还有就是能不能给一个你们现在不同获客渠道的一个贡献吧，就包括多少是来自可能就打广告，然后多少是像刚才说的那些新的一些场景合作方的这个贡献，谢谢。
第一个问题关于那个关于全生命周期的 loss 的那个数据，我先回答一下。那个我们虽然现在看到说回收率和露出率的数据呢，都比我们之前预期的时候还稍微好一点，但整体来说，我们还是会保持之前的那个预计，就是我们全年的新增放款的全生命周期损失率是控制在2.5%到3.5%之间。那从趋势来看，应该是Q by Q 在变好的一个情况。
Okay, let me translate the first question, Daphne. This is coming from our CIO. We do see the D1 delinquency rate and the M1 collection rate came out better than what expected. However, we stay cautious and reiterate our previous guidance about the vintage loss, which is 2.5% to 3.5% for this year. Also, we do see a trending momentum quarter-on-quarter basis.
Definitely, let me answer your second question about the provision. Before I dive into the details, just a small reminder on the Q4. On the earnings call, we mentioned that due to the uncertain macro situation, we provide roughly 750 million additional provision due to the potential loss, right? So when I just mentioned in my remarks that we will not see any further additional provision on that perspective, it's under this the same concept. So as our CRO just mentioned, our lifetime expected loss for the whole year will be within a range of 2.5% to 3.5%. And overall, on the quarter-by-quarter basis, you will see the vintage loss will decrease a lot and, you know, in the coming few quarters. So that's why when we said in the second quarter and the third quarter and going forward, there will be no additional provision on that front. That obviously that's under the assumption that there is no second round of the negative impact of COVID-19. Hopefully I answered your question too, and now I turn to our CEO for your third question.
对，关于获客成本下降的分析，原因会有很多方面。行业竞争的因素可能不是最大的，因为各种广告平台的收入在 Q1 其实也没有一个明显的下降，因为电商和游戏依然是在发生竞争。这里面有几个大的影响方面，就是第一是我们自己在获客的节奏上放慢了一些，这个会让我们的边际成本下降。第二就是我们在我们的精细化经营和场景的拓宽方面做了比较多的工作。那你先翻译。
Sure. Well, we believe the drop down in our customer acquisition cost result from a few factors. Number one, for the industry trend you just mentioned, in our view, that probably not the main reason. As we can see in the first quarter, the fierce competition between e-commerce business and the gaming and business in the advertising sector is still increasing. We believe the second reason may contribute more for the drop down in customer acquisition cost as we
slow down and scale back our customer acquisition activities, which leads to the decline in marginal cost. Thirdly, as we continuously refine our customer acquisition strategy and expand to more and various high-quality external partners, this will contribute to the drop-down.
关于精细化方面，我们过去一直在开发的精准获客的系统，在头部渠道里发挥越来越多的作用。比如说，我们在快手渠道，这个精准系统已经覆盖了50%的广告展现。这个系统会优先计算好我们的投放的 ROI， 再决定是否在一个合格的用户面前展现。这种系统。 正在很好的优化我们的成本，然后在拓宽我们的场景方面，我们接入了越来越多的这种交易场景方，因为我们的用户体验非常好，能够帮助场景更好的形成一种转化，所以受到了伙伴的欢迎。这种场景的渠道贡献比例在目前已经有15%左右的贡献。
Sure. Let me translate for the CEO. There are two points I want to stress here. Number one, we continue to refine our marketing strategy targeted to have a higher ROI. For example, in among the top online channels, we launch our marketing strategies. For example, ByteDance, as you know, it covers 50% of the market activities we devoted under this refined marketing strategy. Secondly, the second point, as we mentioned in our remark, we expanded the external channels with consumption scenarios. Nowadays, it contributes to 15% of our total traffic.
、how much lower can the customer acquisition cost be? And is that actually like based on the revenue sharing model? So I will translate in Chinese. So 就是想跟进一下这个，就跟产品方合作的这个模式，就是获客成本。
能比就是打广告的这个模式能低多少，然后其实是不是根据一个这种revenue sharing，就是一个分润的模式去算这个成本？
Well, as you mentioned, mostly we cooperate with this partner in the revenue sharing model. That's first point. The second point, as you can see, the traffic in those consumption scenarios are with the purpose to shop. Therefore, they can give us better quality. Users with a better credit profile.
好的，明白，谢谢，Thank you.
So once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad.
To cancel, please press 02. Our next question is from Stephen Chan at Haitong International. Please go ahead.
Good evening, management. I have three questions as well. Just make it very quick. I think I better translate one by one and do it one by one. First of all, about the my own estimation about the take rate of the capital light business, it seems that it has been declining in Q1. So just want to know whether it is related to you try to refer better quality customers to you, and then of course lower lending rate customers to you, the funding partners on that part, or because you have to share fewer profits from the funding partner because of the deterioration in asset quality. 我第一个问题就是关于这个 不到底的业务的话，我简单说一下这个回报率好像一季度环比是有所下跌的，就想了解其中的原因是因为我们把比较好的客户开始把比较好的客户介绍给我们的银行，还是因为资产质量下跌了，所以我们从银行那边拿到的回报率是有所
Stephen, this is a very good question, and you're really good to analyze it so in such a short time. Thank you for raising the question. It's kind of a hybrid. First of all, obviously, all assets deteriorate in the first quarter, especially in February. So we have a lot of measures to preempt the situation. First thing is that we renegotiate some terms with some funding partners or business partners in terms of the charge. So to some extent, the charge is slightly lower than the Q4. But the most important thing is that after the negotiation with the business partners, we kind of repeat what we did in the Q4. I.e., we speed up the return, the payback schedule, before the terms. So internally we call it the discount rate is actually higher. So let me put in an example. So there is a 12 terms loan. During the first quarter, we kind of work with our business partner to encourage the borrowers to repay the principal and interest early. Say now it's only four terms left. So we ask them, if you pay them back now, we will waive all the interest, not only for the rest of four terms, but also probably give you one term interest-free treatment, something like that. So the discount rate, so-called discount rate, is actually getting higher a little bit. So all in all, our take rate on the capital line will be slightly lower compared with Q4. So your judgment is right.
Okay. Thank you. Understand. Second question. I think it's similar to Daphne's question, but I want to get more sense about this provision for contingent liabilities, excluding that 280 million, you still have 1.4 billion provisions in 1Q. So I just want to clarify whether this 1.4 billion is purely related to asset quality issue, or you still have some sort of like macro outlook or other parameters putting into your credit risk model and resulting in some provisions. I mean, compared with banks, it's just like whether you still have some stage one and two provisions, like what you see for banks. That means that it's more related to macroeconomic outlook rather than asset quality. If yes, how much will that be? And then I think the follow-up on Daphne's question is, do you expect there will be converging trend between the provisions and the release in the revenue? That means that the gap between the release in liabilities and the provisions will be reduced. 所以简单说一下，就是关于这个到底业务的关于这个担保那边的拨备，想了解一下，里面有大概14亿左右的是里面想了解一下，是不是有一部分是跟我们的 model 里面关于这个很观的未来的展望的改变，所以就放进去。如果有的话，大概的占比或者数额大概是多少？然后就是未来的展望的话，对于现在从guaranteed liabilities 里面的 release 跟现在 expenses 里面的 provision 中间的那个。这个差大概会不会有机会是收窄
？Okay, let me answer your question here. So I think you have two parts of the questions. The first part is how do we evaluate the asset quality? Obviously, in the evaluation model, we need to take into account of the macro economy, and even.Some potential impact of the, you know, Sino-US tension situation. So it's kind of blended together. It's difficult to, you know, divide the, you know, or say quantify the impact of the macro economy versus the pure operation or say industry level or our company levels numbers. So everything are taken into consideration, and also this is for the assets generate or say originate for Q1. So as John just mentioned, there is an easy way to calculate that is you just use 1.5 billion divided by the new loan originationunder the capital heavy model in Q1, it will give you a rough sense how much provision we actually taken. So the number were quite close to, you know, four point something. This is taken into account of, you know, sufficient coverage ratio. Okay. Then your second question is whether there is a sort of a calculation between this provision and the releasing of guarantee liabilities going forward. The short answer is it's a very difficult question for everybody because every single quarter we need to reevaluate the asset quality based on that quarter's situation. So it's hard to say that. But I can give you an example. So this quarter, you know, just under the old accounting standards, the releasing of the guarantee liabilities is 170 million. As I just mentioned in my remarks, it is the highest level of the releasing of guarantee liability. The reason is that in the Q4 last year, we take a more prudent measure to take provisions. It turns out the actual performance is better than our estimates. So we release a significant amount of money to our revenue. So going forward, if today's estimate is too pessimistic compared with the future, we are confident to see the releasing of guarantee liability will go up. On the contrary, if there is a second round of the negative impact of COVID-19, we might take additional provision in down the road. That might mean we have less release of the guarantee liabilities on revenue. But there is no crystal ball, say you can, you know, accurately forecast the number
or say the bridge between this provision and the releasing of guarantee liabilities. Hope I answered your question.
Thank you, very clear. Finally, my question is about the provision for loans receivable, which nobody has trying to ask. Because if you try to estimate that using a credit cost concept, meaning that you divide it with the average outstanding loans, it seems that, you know, it has increased again in Q1. So again, I just want to clarify one thing. In these provisions for loan receivable, apart from asset quality, did you also put in the macroeconomic factors when you try to estimate this so-called on-balance sheet lending business? 我简单说一下，就是说，我们看到一季度的在那个表内的那些贷款的信用成本。 或者是波币，如果我们从波币转化到信用成本的话，其实是环比是有所增加的。我想了解一下这个增加，主要是跟不良有关，还是里面也有一部分是关于跟我们对于宏观那边的展望的一些判断，可能是比较悲观，所以就。 导致那个信用成本有所增加。如果是这样的话，未来几个季度如果这个所谓的宏观的展望有所改善的话，你觉得这一部分尤其是那个表内的贷款的那个信用成本会不会有所减少
？Yeah, Stephen, this is a very good question. There are two main factors lead to the decrease of the provision for loan at amortized cost. First of all. Remember, we talk about this in the past few quarters. Almost every quarter, we say we see the funding cost from consolidated charges was actually low compared with the funding cost from the financial the banks. So we take more on through the consolidated charges, right? But the situation changed in Q1 because the funding cost of financial institution, I mean banks. Decreased significantly, which led to the relatively high funding cost of the trust. So in Q1, we actually intentionally decreased the contribution from the consolidated trust as a funding source. So that's the primary reason for the decrease of provision. The second thing, yes, you are right. In Q4. We see the unfavorable industry situation, and also, you know, when we prepare the results, that was in Q1, so we kind of estimate there will be a significant hit on the asset quality. But when we prepare the Q1 results, we definitely take into account of the macro situation. Obviously now, today, the pandemic issue is much less concern than what we've seen in Q1. So the overall vintage loss, or the expected vintage loss, decreased a little bit, slightly, not too much, but that will contribute to the relatively low provision on the on-balance sheet assets. So basically, these two key reasons drive the decrease. Hope I answer your questions.
Thank you. Very clear.
Our next question is from John Tsai at Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my questions again. It's just want the management to maybe help me to understand a little bit more about the competition landscape. So I think we operate in a segment with a price and on average is 28%. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's on average 28%. So and we understand that the small or medium players are exiting the market. So. Is there any? So basically, the question is how many competitors, mostly social unlisted competitors, because that is the one we can have a look by ourselves. But how many unlisted players with decent size in this, you know, on average 28% segment we are seeing in the market? And are they, you know, in very close competition to us in terms of the risk management and etc.? Thank you very much. 可能想让管理层帮我理解一下这个竞争现在的这个竞争格局吧，就是监管跟疫情可能会让很多中小平台出清，然后那我们这个如果看定价的话是在一个28%的一个细分这个市场吧，那除了上市的，上市的我们可以自己分析了，这个非上市的这些在这个类似的定价的这个有没有一些可能较大的玩家，就是或者说多少，然后这个我们有没有一个
概念说我们的这个风控跟他们相比是一个就是跟这个非常就是就是很可比的这样的一个竞争对手是在一个什么样的水平呢？谢谢啊。好，那我先说一下，你们可以补充啊。对，拿定价来区分这个市场是一个很好的那个方法。对，今天我们看到的在上市的公司里面，可能比较多是在这个区间里面，然后在你说的未上市的公司，像蚂蚁、微众，包括京东，可能更多还是在24以下一点。所以其实在未上市的公司里面，我们可能是不在完全一个客群里面去竞争，从定价上看。但是我们背后其实用户是有相当高的重叠率的，我们做过跟蚂蚁、跟那个微粒贷之间的重叠率的一个分析，还是有一个比较高的一个数字的。所以这里面就是存在一部分用户呢，他可能对价格不一定是那么的敏感，但是可能会对别的方面，比如他的服务
Sure. Okay. Well, let me translate for our CEO. First of all, John, you put a very good way to segment the loan market, consumer finance loan market in China by APR. Well, as for the primary competitors you mentioned, we believe you refer to Ant, WeBank, JD. Most of them operate offer products which is below 24% APR. So by your segmentation, we may not operate in the same sub-segment with those private competitors. However, we do conduct some customer research and find out that in terms of the users, we may belong to the same category with those private competitors, which manifests that there are loan users that they may not be sensitive to the APR, but they lay more emphasis on the user experience and the service.
另外一股这个势力就是 持牌的消费金融公司，他们大部分没上市，但是他也是在这个定价的人群里面去服务。所以这个如果从您说的市场格局的角度来讲，我们跟这三股势力之间不一样的地方在于，在蚂蚁和微众，他们不加入这个群体的竞争，我们所以从人群和定价上跟他们错位竞争。 在以上市的这几家公司里面，他们可能很难具备我们这种，有一个互联网巨头在背后所提供的结构化的能力，包括资金的定价能力，包括这个风险的这种控制能力和合规能力，所以他们很难具备这种全方位的这种结构化能力，去竞争。然后对那些持牌销金来讲，我们的竞争能力在于，他们很多时候不具备真正的风控能力，其实 背后更多的作为一个资金方，同时他们在在用户体验上也跟我们很难去竞争，所以我们在三个群体里面都有一些错位。
Well, to provide our competitive strengths compared to the three group competitors you mentioned, the first type of competitor is the private competitor, for example, Ant, WeBank. We believe because they operate in the lower APR market, competition directly confronting them is quite limited. Second type competitor, as you mentioned, is the viscos in U.S. market. Well, we have strong confidence that we are internet giant backed consumer finance company. We got a strong support from our parent called 360 Group. Therefore, we possess a structural advantage in aspect of risk management, traffic, a brand, and so on. Thirdly, the third type compared to the third type of competitor, which are the licensed consumer finance, we view them as mostly the founding partners in this consumer market. So we overbank them in terms of the risk management capability and the user experience provided to the borrowers. Well, hope that a little bit color on the competitive landscape address your question, John.
非常感谢吴总，挺清楚的，谢谢啊。
Okay, hi operator. Are there any more audience on the question line? If not, maybe we can conclude the call today.
Thank you. There are no questions on the line. So this concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may disconnect.